Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. It's a Brewers Outlet Day. Happy Brewers Outlet Day to you. Oh, it's time to stock up. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere. Water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Wine coolers. And, of course, the pickle bar is second to none. Yesterday, Sean said to me at the when we were off the air at the end of the show, he says, there's a nice dill pickle waiting for you.
I was right, right?
Yeah, you were correct. It was just what the doctor ordered. We've got another winner today, I think. Another big-time winner for you today. Dick Girardi today on his meetings with Muhammad Ali, and also on tomorrow's Belmont Stakes. Dieter Kurtenbach, who happens to be the basketball writer, the NBA writer for Fox Sports, is going to join us today from Cleveland on the NBA Finals. And Jim Jackson on today. Phillies. He'll be with us, 3:35?
You betcha.
Good pick. Really good. Not the guy I expected, obviously, based on what I said. But when in going to, you look at the high school ranks, this kid has a lot of tools, and he has started. He has a great arm, excellent speed, really good defensively, and this year the power came about. I think it's a really nice pick. Now, he won't go to Williamsport this year. My guess would be that he'll start in Florida, and then maybe next year you could see him in Williamsport as a possibility. Just throwing that out there for you. But I thought he was an excellent pick, and my television broadcast partner, Jonathan Mayo, Jonathan and I do 3 Spikes games a year on TV, was on MLB Network last night as their as one of their analysts. We'll get Jonathan here on the show here one of these days. It's pretty easy for me to do. I'll just next Saturday night I'll just look over and say, "Hey, what day can I get you?" Sometimes it's that easy.
If they were all Sean. That easy, are you kidding me?
Sometimes it is that easy where you can just look over. I always love the one with Jack Ham Thursday. Whatever you want. What do you say? Thursday? Dick Girardi. Friday? You're in. So. Well, it's great to have everybody with us today. So that's what we've got. Jim's going to come up at 3:35. And then we will go to Dieter Kurtenbach at 4:06. And then we will turn our attention to Dick Girardi at 4:35. That sounds like a plan, don't you think? I like it. That's today's plan. It's a plan that we stole from management. And how are you doing today, Sean?
We're doing wonderful.
Good.
Would have been nice to see the Pens hoist the cup last night, but boy, Sharks goalie, 44 saves, phenomenal effort as they take it back to California for Sunday night.
1972, I'm a Boston Bruins fan growing up in New England. The Bruins had already won the 1970 Stanley Cup on Bobby Orr's overtime goal. They took out the Blues in 4 straight games. They're playing the New York Rangers. Lead the series 3-1. They're going to go back to the Boston Garden for Game 5. It is obvious to all of us that the Bruins will not only win the game, but they'll win big, and they'll hoist the Stanley Cup in Boston. they lost. They then went back to Madison Square Garden for Game 6. Bobby Orr scored 2 goals. The Bruins won and won the Stanley Cup. So, it, you know, seen this road before. Speaking of hockey, Gordie Howe passed away today. 801 goals in his career, most of his career with the Detroit Red Wings. Retires, then comes back in the WHA with the Houston Aeros because he wanted the opportunity to play hockey with his 2 sons, Mark and Marty Howe. Mark Howe, by the way, went on to have a Hall of Fame career himself. He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. Mostly as a forward, most of his career, latter stages of his career in Philadelphia, he was a defenseman. And then eventually, when the Aeros were in financial trouble, led by the matriarch, Colleen Howe, they signed with the New England Whalers, and they went to Hartford. And I've recounted this story a couple of times, that in 1980, my senior broadcast project, I wanted to do a documentary on the merger between the NHL and the WHA. So I was able to get press passes and cover the Buffalo Sabres and the Hartford Whalers. And when the game was over with, I was then able, and I told both teams what I wanted to do. I was able to get a sit down with then Sabres coach Scotty Bowman, and then for the Whalers, Dave Keon, Hall of Famer, played for years with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I got 15 minutes with Gordie Howe. Gordie Howe acted as if I had covered his career for 20 years. He couldn't have been nicer, classier, forthcoming, gave great answers. It's one of the easiest A's I ever got in my life. I went to one other game that year, and it was at in the old Hartford Civic Center. And I don't think a lot of people realize that for a period of a couple of weeks, the Whalers had signed Bobby Hull. And they're playing the Minnesota North Stars. And in the third period, I was sitting in the end zone. The Whalers rush up ice toward my end. And they put Gordie Howe and Bobby Hull on the same line together. And Howe gets into the zone with an absolutely perfect drop pass to Bobby Hull. And Hull let one rip. And I think it was Cesar Maniago was the goalie. And he snatched it out of the air. I was like, oh, God. I almost saw Bobby Hull score assisted by Gordie Howe. Oh, man. They're on the same team together. And, of course, with Howe wearing number 9, Bobby Hull reverted to his old number that he originally wore with the Blackhawks, and that was 16. So, yes, we have spoken and interviewed the great man, 88 years old, by the way. His last shift in his NHL career, 1980, Whalers, last shift. You want to know what they did? They put Mark Howe on one wing, and even though Marty was a defenseman, they put his other son, Marty, on the other wing. So he skated his last NHL shift with his sons on either side of him. 88 years old, suffered unfortunately from dementia and Alzheimer's at the end. But even Wayne Gretzky, so classy his entire career. He broke all of Howe's records. He always referred to him as always referred to Gordie Howe as the greatest player ever. Wayne Gretzky always did. On the day that Muhammad Ali laid to rest in the hearse, carrying the casket, showered with flowers every step of the way in Louisville. Who would have thought that in 1960, 56 years ago, who in Cassius Clay's family, or Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. himself, who was denied certain restaurants because of his race, would have his hearse 56 years later showered with flowers in the same city in an outpouring of love. I'll never forget 1997 being in Louisville. Penn State played football at Louisville. They played not in Papa John's Stadium. That's a newer stadium. They played where the Louisville minor league baseball team plays. And they came out for the coin toss, and Muhammad Ali came out to the center of the field for the coin toss. And you should have seen the players and how they gathered around Ali. Remember that scene of Ted Williams at Fenway Park with the All-Stars gathered around him? I saw that scene with Muhammad Ali and the Penn State players gathered around him. It meant so much to them. And you know, and I stood there and I watched this play out and I thought, this is something I will never forget. Now, unlike Dick Girardi, Dick met him, talked with him. Great story. He recounted it in the Philadelphia Daily News earlier this week. We will get to Dick to talk about that later in the show today. Jim Jackson from the Phillies Network coming up in the next half hour. Dieter Kurtenbach from the NBA reporter for Fox Sports coming up in the 4:06 half hour. Final half hour, Dick Girardi as we continue. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Kia knows you've been working hard. That's why they've extended the Summers on Us sales event.
Wanna see you in Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
The beach is in your reach because the Summers on Us sales event has been extended at Sunbury Motors Kia. Buy a new in-stock 2016 Optima, Optima Hybrid, Forte, or Soul, and pay nothing for the summer. Your first payment won't be due until November. With Kia taking care of your first two payments and 90 days deferred payments, you get up to 5 months before your first payment is due. That's November, when the summer will be a distant memory. But that's not all. You'll also get 0% financing for up to 66 months. And with Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty, we're talking a worry-free ride to your vacation destination with no payments to make. Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip in Hummel's Wharf at sunburymotors.com.
Tax and tax extra. 0% APR financing to all qualified customers through KMF. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
True refreshment can come in many forms. But it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury.
Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jim Jackson, next half hour, we're going to talk about the Phillies and you know, get his thoughts on the club and about the draft. I thought that first overall pick was on paper, you don't know how these guys are going to develop. All this stuff takes time, but I thought that was an excellent pick. At some point we'll get Jonathan Mayo on the show, who knows more about this than we do. He takes a good, long, hard look at all these guys and what they do. It'll be easy enough. I'll just look over at him next Saturday and say what day available. It's what we do. You got to be able to I'm fortunate I get to work with the people I get to work with. I mean, and believe me, we tap them enough to be on the show. Oh, goodness gracious. But it, on paper, it looks like it's a great pick for them. First overall pick. Now, is he, what, 4 or 5 years away from possibly getting to the majors? Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of road it is. These things take time. It's just the way it is. It's the way minor league baseball is. So that'll be coming up, and then we'll go from there. Jim will be on the next half. I'll at least get his read. Then we'll get his read, really, more importantly, on the Phillies and where they are right now. Hey, look, I mean, look, the Phillies overachieved early. They won a lot of one-run games. Yeah, it comes back eventually to get you a little bit. You know, I mean, problem is they don't hit enough, and everybody knows it. And that's the problem. So, and what I don't think they had not had what a 4-run inning all year. I mean, who doesn't have a 4-run inning all year? I mean, even the Sunbury Broadcasting softball team has had 4-run innings, don't you think? Led by the suit, by the way.
Oh, that's a motley crew, tell you that.
Oh, well, I mean, we have the suit hitting cleanup. That's because the last time we didn't, he cried. You know, and there's no crying. It's softball. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah. Looking forward to all our guests today. It's going to be a fun show today. It's going to be a good show today. Especially getting, we've never had him on the show, have we?
Jim Jackson? No, we have not. I'm surprised that Rob Center from WKOK Sports on our Sunrise show didn't give me a bunch of questions for Mr. Jackson regarding the Philadelphia Flyers. I was waiting for that email, but didn't get it.
That's true, because obviously Jim's a great, he's great at all this stuff. He's outstanding. Big timer. And we're great to have him on. And you know, we got a lot of Philly on today, man. We got Girardi on, too. Girardi's going to tell us about the Belmont. Girardi says that for the first time in his life, he might be tempted to go to one of the windows. Stop laughing.
Could he be picking an upset? Interesting.
Well, if you want to make any money on this thing, you have to. But you have to remember, it's a mile and a half. None of these horses has ever come close to running a mile and a half. I think the Belmont is the single most unpredictable sporting event out there. Jim Jackson, next half hour, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. This day in sports history, then Jim Jackson, Babe Ruth became the all-time home run leader on this date in 1921 when he hit number 120 in his career. Rocky Colavito had 4 home runs in 1959. 1975, Pele, known in some sporting circles as Peel, signed a three-year contract with the Cosmos. Cosmos used to sell out Giants Stadium all the time with Pele, Giorgio Canalia, Franz Beckenbauer, Shep Messing was their goalie. They sold out Giants Stadium routinely. 1981, Pete Rose hit number 3,630, tying Stan Musial's National League record. And the Colorado Avalanche beat the Florida Panthers 1-0 triple overtime and completed a four-game sweep to win the Stanley Cup. Ray Bourque getting his first cup. One of the really, really great sportscasters. I don't care whether it's the Flyers or working with the Phillies or whatever he chooses to do is Jim Jackson. First time we've had him on the show. An absolute pleasure. Thanks for taking the time out today, Jim.
Great to be here, guys.
All right. What's your assessment of what we've seen from the Phillies so far as you've looked at this? I mean, I think everybody expects what's going to happen here, but still, what have you seen?
You talking about from the draft or from the season?
From the season, I'll get the draft in a moment.
From the season, yeah. I mean, I think this year is all about really planting seeds for the future now. When they get off to the 24-17 start, I think a lot of fans started to get real excited, and hey, winning always does that. But I don't think management at any time started to waver from looking long-term. It's all about finding out which pieces that they currently have in place that will still be in place as they move forward and which ones won't, and also continuing to build the future pieces at the minor league levels and then through the draft as well. So that's really what this year is all about. And the winning, it was sort of a bonus there early. Not that they can't win and be at least competitive the rest of the way, but they were winning a lot of one-run games. They were getting some breaks, let's be honest, and they were squeezing out some wins, and it was fun. Hard to keep that up over 162 games, though. You have to have some breathers where you win, you know, 7-1 and 8-1. They just haven't had the offense to do that. So we'll see if that develops, maybe with some call-ups as they move along, maybe with some guys improving their performances that are already in the lineup. Tommy Joseph certainly has added some energy with his power bat. So we'll see how it goes as we move along. But that's really the plan, I think, for the whole year.
Jim, as you've looked at it, what are a couple of pieces that you see that do have an important part of the future where you're saying, you know what, I see something in that guy where in the future he is going to be one of the cornerstones?
Well, you can start with a rotation. I know Vince Velasquez just went on the disabled list. If he can stay healthy, Velasquez, Aaron Nola, Jared Eichhoff, all to me are real good building blocks for the rotation. Aaron Nola, I know in talking with people, sometimes when you watch him, you say, oh, he doesn't have the best stuff in the world. Well, he does have good stuff because he knows what he's doing with every pitch and his mound presence, his makeup, those kind of things, off the charts good. So I think Aaron Nola is at the top or right there in the upper echelons of the rotation. Jared Eichhoff has tremendous stuff. He's still learning how to use all of his stuff, and lately he's been using his slider more and been more effective. And Velasquez has an electric arm, of course, to help. It's been an issue with him in the past, and unfortunately is an issue right now as he's put on the disabled list. But those three pitchers certainly in the rotation. And then when you look positionally, I mean, Michael Franco has not had the start of the year at least that we anticipated. I think he might have gotten our expectations a little bit off the charts with the spring he had and down in Clearwater. But he is a guy that I think will get it going and be a solid piece at third base. Odubel Herrera has been anything you could expect, really, from an offensive standpoint, at the top of the order. So I think Herrera is certainly a piece to look forward to, whether he's in center field and he's the leadoff hitter going forward once they add some other pieces. I don't know about that, but I certainly think he's part of the mix offensively. And then there's Freddy Galvis, who he's struggling right now offensively, but defensively at shortstop, he's been really about as good as has been in baseball this year. Only a handful of errors, and he's made some spectacular plays. He's been much improved from last year defensively. His offense down now to 230, and he needs to improve on that. When you have J.P. Crawford coming, you might see Galvis maybe moving to second base. Cesar Hernandez a piece moving forward. We're still finding out about that. So there's still a lot of questions, but certainly the four or five I mentioned are guys that certainly look good. Tommy Joseph is entering into that equation. Got to do it over more of a long-term thing. Cameron Rupp could certainly be part of the equation, maybe not as the starting catcher, but certainly as a guy who gets some at-bats and is a backup catcher. So, yes, there are some pieces on hand already, and there are more to come.
Jim, do you find yourself glancing more and more at the minor leagues because of the current situation they're in? And if so, what are you noticing?
You know what? I always do that. I've always been a guy that looks at the minor leagues, even when the Phil system wasn't very strong only, what, 2-3 years ago. I'd always be scouring the minors, and we do the minor league scores on our post-game show, so I have to do it anyhow, but I enjoy doing it, and there are a lot of intriguing prospects. So, yeah, this year has been quite interesting whenever you look down to really any level. They have some guys that are a long way away, and then they have guys that are getting closer. And so it's good to have depth in your organization. It's not the kind of depth they've really had since prior to their run, which began in 2007. So, you know, they're again at a place where they have players at the same position, even in some cases, that when you look at catcher and you look at Knapp and you look at Alfaro, you have two catchers, one at Triple A, one at Double A. Which one's going to be the guy? You look at the starting pitchers they have, both at Double A and Triple A. There's definitely some depth in the organization. They're going to add to that depth with the draft here this weekend, because they're obviously picking high and they're going to add some more talented players. So it's definitely exciting when you check out the minor leagues these days.
One of my broadcast partners happens to be, when I work baseball on TV, is Jonathan Mayo, who last night was on MLB Network analyzing the draft. That's his primary job. He's very high on what the Phillies did with the first overall pick. What's the read you get in Philadelphia?
Well, I mean, we started hearing his name as the probable pick, although the Phillies were very tight-lipped about that first pick for quite some time. But I think over the last 2 or 3 weeks, we started hearing his name, so you start looking into reading up on him and finding things out about him. One thing I really like about him is he has real good character. I think the Phillies have looked in the last couple of years to start going back to that, which I think they did to help build their championship team, is look for guys of character. If you have two guys equal in talent, you're going to go with a guy that has any kind of better character. If you have two guys that are close in talent, maybe even one guy has a little more talent, but has some baggage, and the other guy's a clean slate and a real high character guy, they might go with a high character guy. Well, Moniak has both. He has talent and character, it appears, and that's really good. He's everybody you talk to about him says he can swing. Charlie Manuel, who just loves to talk about hitting some a couple times and just couldn't stop raving about his swing and his approach. So his bat, as he said, is his number one tool, but it's not like he's weak in the other areas. He's outstanding defensively, decent arm. And the power hasn't been there so far, only 7 home runs as a senior, 0 as a junior, but he's getting bigger, he's getting stronger, and when you hear him talk, you just know that this is one of those guys that's going to work at what he's not good at, which is tough to do with athletes sometimes. They love doing what they're really good at over and over again in practice, but they don't necessarily like doing what they aren't as good at. And he seems to be the kind of kid who's going to work at maybe his weaknesses and try to get stronger. And Philly seemed pretty confident he'll be a 15 to 20 home run guy once he makes it to the majors.
In fact, he's added to his power numbers this year. It's actually been one of the better power years that he's had. And I think they love his defense and his arm out there too, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, they like everything about him. I think they love his bat the most, but they do like his defensive ability. When you're talking about a center fielder, it could be one of your top offensive players. Maybe supply a little pop by the time he makes it to the majors, but be a strength. He can run the bases. Then he's 5-tool players and all that kind of stuff. But he's certainly a guy that's got a lot of talent and can do a lot of things. Now, he's 18 years old. I've seen some people
that's
say
right.
that his bat is so advanced that he won't take the usual 4 or 5 years that a high school player would take to get it to the majors. But I'll believe that when I see it, because it's tough. The high school is one thing, big jump once they get the pro ball, and then each level is a jump. So I'll believe that he's going to be here in 2 or 3 years when I see it, because that would mean he'll get here as a 20-year-old or at the latest a 21-year-old. And that just doesn't happen very often. It happens once in a while. I mean, we've seen Carlos Correa. We've seen some guys who can get here fast. Aaron Nola got here very quickly, but he was out of college. When he was out of high school, I tend to think it's going to take a little longer than that. We'll see. They seem very confident in his ability. And, again, he seems like a hard worker and a guy who really wants to get here fast and is willing to do whatever it takes. And that's half the battle there, too.
Jim, what does it take you to shift gears from doing hockey to doing baseball?
Well, sports are complete opposites, so it's a major shift. It's not about that. But I mean, it's fun to me. I mean, what I love about baseball and what I love about hockey is are completely different, opposite, 100% different things. I mean, I love the speed of hockey, the intensity of hockey, and the physicality of hockey. In baseball, I love the pace in terms of the fact that it's a marathon over the course of the season, and all the different chapters of the book that are written during the course of the season, and to follow them as you're going along with the marathon that is the season. I love that, and it goes with summer because you're out there and in the elements and all that. So, I love both sports. Whenever I'm asked about which one I love more, I have an easy answer for that because I have two kids. I have a boy and I have a girl. And both, I love them both, and they're completely different people. They're different in so many ways, but I love them both in different ways and certainly equally. So it's an easy answer for that because I love both sports, even though they're so different.
I get asked the same thing all the time because of the Penn State football basketball deal that I do. I get asked all the time, plus I add in baseball too, which one do you like? And I always tell everybody the same thing. It's the one that's in front of me at the moment.
Yeah, there you go. It's what have you done for me lately, right?
Right, yeah, it's whatever's in front of me at the moment is the one I'm loving at that moment. Very quickly for the Flyers.
Baseball 101 the other day.
Right now, because obviously we're watching the Sharks and the Pens go head-to-head, and they're going to go back to San Jose out to the tank for Game 6 coming up. Where do you see the Flyers at this particular point with the, you know, because the entry draft is not going to be something that solves all their problems. It's going to have to be something else.
They're going to have to build through the draft and add to what they've already started. They have, similar to the Phillies, a whole bunch of prospects that are beginning their development, or some of them are further along than just beginning their development. And so it's exciting. The Flyers, in terms of wins and losses, a little ahead of the Phillies, because they made the playoffs, obviously, last year. The Phillies are in their 500, too. So maybe that's not even the right statement to make. But bottom line is, I think more was expected of the Flyers on the ice this year than the Phillies on the field. But both teams have a lot of prospects coming, and the future is bright for both. Looking forward to next training camp. Ivan Provorov will have a shot to make the team, and from everything I've seen and watching some of his games and heard about from people who watched his games, this guy is a real stud, and will make it very difficult for Ron Hextall not to include him on the roster next year. We'll see. He has to perform. I mean, it's all about performance. But you add him to Ghost in the back line, and some of the veterans they're going to have there, and then up front they've got Konechny coming perhaps, and they might have to make some moves to add to their forward ranks in terms of size. I'm a little worried about the size or lack of size up front, but bottom line is they're getting close, and they have a lot of pieces on hand as well. So it's the theme in Philadelphia right now, with the exception of the Eagles, who are they sort of tried to do the rebuild on the run and are changing their quarterback, or will change their quarterback at some point. They're not doing a full rebuild, but certainly the Sixers, Flyers, and Phillies are in the rebuild process, and it's a fun time because you have a lot of young talent about to come to the scene, and I think it's going to turn this into a real exciting town sports-wise here in a short period of time.
And you'll be right in the middle of it. Jim, great respect for your work, and thanks so much for carving out a few minutes for us today. The audience really loved it.
Well, I appreciate the words, kind words. Very nice of you, and it was a lot of fun. And I must say, it is a surreal day in the world of sports, though, because I'm right as we're talking, watching the services for Muhammad Ali, and of course, earlier today, the great Gordie Howe passed, and it's been a tough year with Ed Snyder's passing, Rick McLeish. It's just been tough, but the sports world, all other worlds, Father Time waits for no one, and we just have to honor the lives of these great people and celebrate their lives as they move on.
Well, all four of them gave us great moments. Snyder, of course, in his position, everything he did with the Flyers. Ricky McLeish scoring the cup-winning goal against the Bruins in Game 6. Gordie Howe, I had met, and he actually helped me out on a senior project in college, believe it or not. And then, of course, Muhammad Ali. So he did. He did.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I can't even imagine in watching the tributes to Gordie today. It's like everyone had their moment with Gordie. I had my moment with Gordie. I had a couple times where I interviewed him, but the first time I actually interviewed him was 1998 in the Stanley Cup Finals, and I was working for NHL Radio, and it was the Caps and Red Wings in the Finals, and I had to do two interviews and one intermission. One of them was up top where they had all the prospects who were about to be drafted in that June's draft, and the number one pick consensus that year was Vinny LeCavalier. So I interviewed Vinny, he was 18 at the time, and then I had to run all the way downstairs in the same intermission and before the intermission was over, interview Mr. Hockey, who sat about three rows behind the Red Wings bench, of course. And I went down and interviewed, and he just could not. I mean, I run down there, I'm out of breath. I was probably sweating for all I remember. And I get in there, and he just sat me down in the seat next to him, and he asked me a couple of questions before they threw it to me. And it was almost feel like he was interviewing me. And he's just one of those guys who made you feel great. And he's been through a tough battle, certainly fought very hard here in the last years of his life. And I know, of course, his son, Mark, and I actually knew his other son, Marty, pretty well, too. He was a coach of a team I worked for in the minors. So it's a great loss. Condolences out to that family, to Gordy. He'll be missed for sure.
No question. Jim, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it very much.
Anytime. Take care.
Jim Jackson, Phillies, Flyers, one of the truly outstanding play-by-play guys out there, and obviously an outstanding feel for any sport. Coming up next half hour, Dieter Kurtenbach from Fox Sports. He'll join us to talk about the NBA Finals. Final half hour, Dick Girardi today, my basketball broadcast partner, also happens to be one of the top horse racing writers in the country. His remembrance of Muhammad Ali, as well as the Belmont Stakes, as we continue with today's show, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Rob Center in the morning, I think, was going to email me 18 Flyer questions. I got a couple in there, Rob, but not all of them. Why do I sense that the excerpt of that interview is going to appear on Monday morning show?
Possibility. Maybe even tomorrow morning sports.
Rob's like, way to go. We got Jim Jackson. Well, it's great to have him on. Dieter Kurtenbach. First time we've had Jim on the show. Dieter Kurtenbach is going to make his first appearance on the show from Fox Sports. And he's going to join us to talk about the NBA Finals. He will join us from Cleveland. Actually spent a good chunk of his career covering the Golden State Warriors. Now he's covering the NBA as a whole for Fox Sports. But he has a really good handle and feel, obviously, on both teams. We were going to have him on yesterday. He literally was called into a meeting, and the meeting ran long. And that's why we couldn't get him on yesterday. But that works out better because the game's tonight. It works out better. The game. I mean, the fact he'd come on today, actually, I think is even better. So that worked out really well.
I'm thinking tonight is going to be the best game of the series. And would you think who wins tonight is going to take it all?
I don't know. The first statement I agree with. I agree with you. The second one, I don't know. There's still two other games in Golden State that are still available that are in Oakland. And that's a heavy factor. Kevin Love evidently is going to play tonight, but if you're Ty Lue, please. I mean, he can't play more than 10-15 minutes tonight. I mean, my goodness, the Suit's a better defensive player than Kevin Love. And the Suit has no movement at all.
Well, Kyrie Irving can play a little better defense, too. Plus, offense in the paint's been a little questionable as well.
Well, Kyrie Irving is another one of the... Kyrie Irving is the equivalent of the guy that you play pickup hoops with that just knocks down every shot. But at the other end, he's only playing defense because the rules state you have to before you go back on offense. Oh, the rules say we have to play defense first? All right, I will. I take that back, by the way. The Suit is not a better defensive player than Kevin Love. It's impossible. I was just trying to make a totally, completely dramatic statement. Stop laughing, Sean.
Get a text from him there in about 2 seconds.
I know I will. It's what makes him the suit.